Welcome back to the Freedom Fiends, broadcasting through the Libertarian Reeducation Center's Low Orbit Ion Cannon, high atop Financial Beast Plaza on the artificial satellite LibPair 2017 in the Alpha Centauri region. And as always, the Freedom Fiends is covered by the BIPCOT No Government License. This allows reuse by anyone except governments and the agents thereof. To learn more, go to BIPCOT.org. All right, and we're back, and I'm Shane, and I'm here joined by Jeremy Murder Dog Hengler. How you doing, Jeremy?
Hey, what's up, man? That was the old school. Was that? That was the old school second hour intro. God, it's been forever.
That was the second hour intro. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, I definitely wouldn't have been able to remember that. I've had a horrible time trying to remember just the regular intros. Anytime I've done these so sporadically, but that's impressive, man. So
well, I know lately we've been doing shorter intros than the first hour intro. Ever since we weren't live anymore, but. That one is a little bit shorter, and I always did like it. You know, I like the whole Alpha Centauri idea of our signal reaching Alpha Centauri last year. So,
yeah, even though I think Michael admitted that on the air at one point that he actually screwed up and it was actually not going to because it was pointed in the wrong direction or something like that. Anyway.
Well, I mean, if it's broadcast, you know, radio waves do spread out. And if it's broadcast from,
like, yeah, I know, but I think
30 some.
Yeah, I know, but I still think because it was in the northern hemisphere, it would actually go in the complete opposite direction of where it would need to go to Alpha. I don't remember. He talked about it at some point during a couple of shows, but I remember. But I think afterwards he said we're still going to keep claiming it anyway because, you know, who knows? Maybe, hopefully.
Maybe.
Anyway.
And there is an Earth-like planet around Proxima Centauri, 4.2 light years away. And I like to think they're listening to the show.
Yeah, I give that stuff some thought every once in a while. And normally I don't care, but it was like, yeah, and I think in the back of my mind, I'm still one of those people that'd be like, yeah, it'd be nice to think, I think it's still nice to think that there's some other intelligent life over there. Like I listen to a lot of, I don't know if you ever listen to the show, Sovereign Tech with Brian Sovereign. He does a lot of tech stuff, but he's an anarchist too, and he talks about a wide variety of stuff. But he's always held this position that you know there's just no intelligent life form out there, and we're all idiots for trying and wasting our time instead of just going exploring on our own, like, you know, hoping that there's.
Well, it's debatable whether there's any here.
Yeah, that's definitely true. but yeah, I guess like I said, in the back of my mind, I still always hope there's something out there, you know. Not something that's going to come destroy us, although, you know, I'm sure humanity probably deserves that.
If they could, they would have.
Yeah, that's kind of Sovereign's attitude. The whole thing that, yeah, if this stuff could have happened already, it would have. Why hasn't it? We've been around for long enough. You know, humans have been around for a long enough period of time. And other than some crop circles and a whole bunch of rednecks and hillbillies who claim they've been abducted, you know, because it always seems to be those people. Yeah, I went there. Those people.
Hey, now. Well, I've never had that kind of encounter, but I have actually sighted an unidentified flying object at one point in my life, which I have now identified as I think it's the Lockheed Martin TR-3B, out of Groom Lake, Nevada, also known as Area 51.
Oh yes.
Yeah.
Well. Whatchamacallit. Well, plenty of people have, I think, can actually say that they've seen, you know, a UFO, because that all that means is it's unidentified, even if at the moment,
right.
Even if only at the moment. But yeah, I don't have any of those experiences, but it does seem to, the people that have those stories do usually seem to fall in a certain category. I don't know why that is. I'm not saying anything. Not there's anything wrong with that.
I happened to be, I think I was probably around 12 years old, maybe sixth grade, and it was the middle of the summer, daytime, you know, and I saw one of those black triangles that was unidentified at the time because it was top secret, and it's still pretty classified, but there's a lot more information out there about those now, you know, how the government contracts with private companies to, you know, create new technologies that were, I don't know, supposedly reverse engineered from an alien crash, but who knows if that's true. But yeah, that's our tax dollars at work, those black triangles in the sky.
Well, you know, as much as I hate tax money being spent on pretty much anything, you know, at least ones that are actually getting up and flying in the sky, that's better than, what is that? Was it the F-35? Is that the big money sucking one that they can't seem to get off the ground. They just keep, they keep breaking and falling out of the air, or, you know, falling out of the sky or whatever.
Yeah.
Stuff like
that. At least they got one that works.
Well, that's what I'm saying, you know, for all the things they could be doing, at least one of them flies, you know.
Yeah.
Maybe they have to rely on the alien technology for that. I don't know. But yeah, how do we even get to this? I don't even know.
We're like, I don't know. We've just been kind of randomly winging it, going wherever our minds take us.
Oh, we were talking about Alpha Centauri.
Alpha Centauri.
That's what it was. Yeah, that makes sense. But yeah, like I said, I don't have any personal experiences. I guess I'm hopeful in part, but I don't really think about it all that much. But it was funny because as we were talking about it, I was thinking that, well, it's kind of falls in similar categories to me on some levels of, you know, the whole, just the belief and stuff like that. Like, you know, some people take it to a certain extreme with like aliens and whatnot, but I was thinking the connection between that and stuff like spirituality. And, that's actually, I think, sort of starts to roll into some of the stuff you wanted to talk about tonight anyway.
Right.
So,
yeah, that's kind of where my focus has been lately. Like, I'll always be an anarchist, but I feel like, you know, as anarchists, we are so much more than just anarchists. And we can bring anarchy to all these other, I guess, categories and parts of life. There's all walks of life of different kinds of people that haven't been exposed to our ideas yet. And, you know, spirituality is one of those things I've been kind of really getting into lately, or it's been getting into me, if you think about it, because, you know, I've always been kind of a spiritually inclined person, but ever since my journey into anarchism, I've been this really right-brained, logic-headed person who was all about economics and morality and all this stuff. But recently, some things have happened where, you know, spirituality has kind of slapped me upside the head again and caused me to really focus on that as like the primary aspect in my life. And as far as anarchy goes, like, I'll always be an anarchist, you know what I mean? But like I said, we're so much more than that. And I recently went to this tribe gathering that I attended also in 2016. And when I went there in 2016, I went there as an anarchist. And I was like, oh, I'm going to teach them anarchy, you know. And when I got there, it turned out that they had so much to teach me. There actually was a couple of other anarchists there, but they were like left-leaning anarchists, you know. But when I got there and I saw what they were doing, they were homesteading this 17-acre property. They had off-grid running water. They had a 24/7 kitchen that was free food. It's like vegan, organic, and all that stuff. And they were full-on agorists, or agorists, however you pronounce it, without even knowing the terminology. So here I thought I was going to go there and preach to them about how things should be done. And there they were doing it already, you know. And so I went back again this year. It was the gathering of the tribe in central Indiana. And it's a lot of people who are affiliated with like the Medicine Tribe. I don't know if you've ever heard of that. There's a band called Naco and Medicine for the People, and a lot of their followers, you know, call themselves the Medicine Tribe. But anyway, this is like a local version of that. But yeah, they've really upgraded since. Like, they have a stage with live music. They actually have a solar heater now for showers, so you can take a hot shower, like off-grid hot showers. You know what I mean? And their kititchen has been completely revamped.
I have a solar shower with me. I could take an off-grid solar shower. Yeah. I could take an off-grid hot shower whenever I can. Pretty much whenever I want.
Yeah. But they're all about, you know, self-sustainability, organic gardening, permaculture, you know, all that kind of stuff. And but they're really in touch spiritually. And I kind of was expecting a little bit more of that this time, because when I went there before, I was kind of blindsided by how connected these people are with, you know, spirit and what I learned from them. And so this time I went there and had a good time. It was really cold and really rainy. But so on the first day it was raining, and they went to light what they call the sacred fire. Like, there was various campfires in different camps around the area, but there was like this central campfire, which they called the sacred fire.
Like most festivals, there's usually one centralized location for that. You know?
Yeah, kind of like the fire near the Spontaneous Order Tent at Midwest Peace and Liberty Fest. Yeah, you know, it's kind of like the gathering, the central gathering point.
Even Pork Fest before it got horrible, they have a giant bonfire spot that, you know, the centralized location.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
But so they actually do a ritual before they light the fire where they bless it with sage and Palo Santo. And I donated some sage and Palo Santo for the ritual. And they lit the sacred fire. And as soon as they lit this fire, the rain stopped. And I kind of saw that as like an as above, so below type situation. Like as soon as they lit the sacred fire, the rain stopped, you know. And I kind of saw that as like a metaphor for within myself, you know. As soon as you light that fire within yourself, you know, the rains of your life kind of cease, you know. So then, you know, we had a good time sitting around the fire, hanging out, and we sung songs around the fire. There's this guy, I can't remember his name. I think it was Adam something. And he was what's called a song weaver. And he not only taught us, you know, how to find our voice and sing, but he taught us how to weave different verses of the songs together in a harmonious way so that they all kind of can be heard so that you don't hear any one over the other. But there was a point where, you know, like he can tell when some people are holding back. You know, he's a very intuitive person. And he came over to me at one point and, you know, discussed with me, like, you know, is there a situation in your life where you've been discouraged from like singing in a group, you know, which has actually happened to me a couple of times. Back in choir in like middle school, you know, I used to try to make up new words to the song. So it would rhyme, but I would make up new words and I got called out for that. But then I've also been told that I'm tone deaf and I shouldn't sing, you know. So anyway, he kind of helped me work through that.
I kind of agree. Yeah. So he kind of
helped me work through that and find my voice and find the harmony to sing in the group. And things went really well. So yeah, I kind of overcame a little bit of the fear of expression when it came to singing. Although, you know, I've never had, well, for the last couple of years, you know, doing these shows and stuff, I haven't really had too much of a problem speaking, but when it comes to singing, it's like a whole different can of worms for me. So yeah, I did find a little bit more confidence in expressing myself through song and possibly even through the spoken word itself. I do have a poem that I had written years ago that I had planned on reciting while I was there. I've performed it at a couple of coffee shops and open mic nights and stuff like that. But I just didn't find the courage to actually share it there at the fire, but that's okay because, you know, everybody was having a good time and singing. But there was a point when I was sitting there, you know, staring into the fire. Now, I may have smoked a little and drank a little, but not much, actually. And I started to have, like, visions. I was staring into the fire and, like, the logs and the embers kind of started to take on different shapes of like archetypes. Like at first I saw like a human face in the logs, the embers. And then I saw like a parrot, you know, and then I saw like a tiger. And then I started seeing all kinds of things like in the embers and I started having visions. See, these people had shown me like back in 2016 and again, you know, just how life can be, like how all the possibilities, the way things could be. And I started to not only see that, but like how things could be for the future on a personal level, on a collective level, you know, for the world as a whole. And it was really inspiring. And so I came out of that whole experience with a kind of a renewed sense of spirituality and connection, you know, with our fellow human beings. But a lot has kind of led up to that whole experience, you know, because I've been through a lot this fall, emotionally and spiritually. And a lot of times emotional hardships provide the stimulus for spiritual growth. And that's pretty much what I'm going through right now. I won't go into too much detail here on the show, but I have been kind of thrown into a huge emotional mess that I've kind of pulled myself out of with this psychological and spiritual growth. I will say that it's Venus retrograde right now, and this kind of stuff all kind of did start for me at the beginning of what they call the pre-shadow of Venus retrograde. Now, planetary retrogrades, I'm just going to say, are like an optical illusion, but the ancients, you know, used to keep an eye on the movements of the planets and the celestial bodies, and they made up all kinds of mythologies to go along with this. And a lot of times, the mythologies kind of do reflect a lot of what seems to happen during these events. So I used to always keep track of Mercury retrograde, which affects communication and travel. And I'd always double check travel plans and make sure my car was running well. And anytime you communicate with somebody, sometimes, you know, you'll have to reword things. But I never felt any sort of planetary transit on the level that I'm feeling this Venus retrograde. I never thought it could be so emotionally tangible, something as simple as like an astrological transit, you know what I mean? But as soon as Venus entered its pre-shadow phase, some things happened in my life that accentuated that shadow side of myself. And I've been getting really into the whole Venus mythology lately, especially around Venus retrograde. Venus is retrograde in Scorpio this year, which only happens for 40 days out of every 8 years. So the last time this happened was like 2012, you know,
2010.
So it's a really rare event, but Venus appears to, it's an optical illusion. It appears to stop in the sky and backtrack for 40 days and then stop again and go forward. But during the midpoint of this phase, Venus starts as an evening star. It's visible in the evening sky after the sun sets, and it's one of the brightest. It's not a star, but it's one of the brightest things that you can see in the sky. But then when it goes into its retrograde, it also kind of descends towards the horizon. And I think just within the last couple of days, it has gone below the horizon. So Venus is no longer visible, and that's symbolized as her descent into the underworld. I think in some mythologies, Venus is known as Persephone. And this Persephone myth goes like, she descends into the underworld and sheds the shadow parts of herself, which can kind of symbolize your identity or things that you're holding on to, and descends into the underworld and becomes invisible, where she dies and is reborn, right? And then when Venus does rise again, which I think will happen in a week or less, I know Venus conjuncts the sun on the 26th, and then I think it rises from the horizon around the 30th or so. And this is considered like the rebirth of Venus. And it actually becomes a morning star at that point because it rises before the sun. And so this starts a whole new Venus cycle. But more than that, it's like symbolic of like a death rebirth process within ourselves. And not only have I seen, you know, the relationship aspects of Venus retrograde within the, I guess, collective subconscious, you could say, or collective conscious for those of us who are aware of it. But I've also seen how it is serving as kind of a symbolic death and rebirth process for us, you know, because we get rid of the old and we're bringing the new. You know, it's a time for being reborn. And so that's kind of the whole process I'm going through with this Venus mythology or the Persephone myth. I'm actually taking a course on it right now. It's like a 3-week course that involves not just the astrological aspects of it, but the mental symbology of it too. So I'm taking this seriously, you know, because this is something that has apparently affected me on a very deep level.
I see that. You're, although I have no idea what you're saying half the time. I'm curious because, I guess to play devil's advocate, because I know you said it to me earlier, and I think you just kind of alluded to it again before about, you know, how you've been seeing this on a broader scale, not just in yourself, but other people. Now, mm-hmm. You know, you and I have discussed this stuff in the past. You know, I jokingly refer to you as the woo woo man, and not that I'm not spiritual at all. And you know, as I've discussed,
which is a label I now wear proudly.
I know, which is what you're supposed to do with stuff like that. Take it and turn it around. but you know, I've had my own experiences, and I have certain degrees of understandings, beliefs, whatever, when it comes to stuff like that. But you know, obviously I haven't delved anywhere. Like, I had never even heard of, I mean, I the whole Mercury retrograde thing I had heard before I became friends with you, but I definitely learned a lot more about it after hearing you discuss it a lot of the times. But I'd never even heard the Venus one. I'd never even heard of until you mentioned it a while back. And so I'm curious, is it you know, is there a chance that just because you're so immersed in this, that's why you're seeing it more in other people? Or
yeah, okay, think, so
or you know, or you're convinced that it's just happening. You know, it is just happened. So many people happen to be having the same issues, similar issues at the
right.
same time.
So it's like, let's say you buy a green Honda Element, right? And then everywhere you go, you start
exactly
to see
what
other
I was
Honda
thinking.
Elements.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Exactly, yeah. The analogy I was thinking of.
At first, I started to think, you know, it was just that sort of thing. Where, you know, where you're paying more attention to the things that are similar to your experience. But it seems like a lot of people, like an overwhelming amount, like higher than what you would expect for, what is this, the statistical margin of error or whatever in science. Like, a great majority of the people around me in person and online. And that's the weird thing, is because, you know, I went through this emotional process, and the tone of my Facebook posts have obviously changed. And a lot of people have reached out to me to say that, you know, not only are they going through the same thing, but they told me, you know, their specific experiences, which have a lot of, it's kind of like the coincidences are mirrored with those that I'm going through. And it was almost the exact same time frame. Because, you know, middle of September, like at the end of the first week in September, probably around September 9th, I think is when Venus entered the shadow. And that's when a lot of stuff started to go south for a lot of people. And a lot of people got into this very same dynamic in their relationships, where one person, it's called the chaser-runner dynamic. And it's has a lot to do with our attachment styles, with the way we approach relationships. But one person will assume the role of chaser. The other one will assume the role of runner. And, you know, one person will be clingy and needy, and the other person will need space, and they'll run away because they feel trapped, you know. And this is a theme I've seen replayed over and over among my friends, and even people I didn't know before who had randomly reached. I've had like a dozen people, like, that were Facebook friends that I never interacted with before, that had reached out and shared their experiences with me and told me that they're going through the same thing. And so I feel like there's a lot of stuff going on collectively that, you know, we kind of have to deal with. And I feel like I'm kind of called to help heal these people through a lot of these kind of things, because, you know, I've facilitated my own healing through this process, and I've done so pretty quickly, actually. I'm sure that my other half, who is currently in a running phase, is probably skeptical of the rate of growth which I've currently experienced. You know, if I was her, I would be skeptical too. You know, that there's no way he's growing this quickly and covering so much ground. But you'd be surprised how these things can motivate us and wake us up and snap us out of our old paradigms. So yeah, I'm taking this seriously, and I'm making a lot of progress, and I'm able to help people with their progress too. I feel called to be a healer in some way. I always have. I've always considered myself to be a healer of some type. I always wanted to be a doctor. I went to school for biology and chemistry, but dropped out when I realized they were just training us to be drug dealers for the pharmaceutical companies. and after that, I started studying naturopathic techniques, complementary medicine, stuff like that. So, I mean, I'm pretty well versed in, you know, herbs and things like that. But when it comes down to like energy medicine and things like that, that's something I had only kind of scratched the surface of, you know, 20 years ago, but it's like coming back around again and becoming like more of a focus for me. So when it comes to dealing with emotions and things like that. Like, I'm facing this head on right now, and it seems like this is what a lot of other people need too. So I feel like I'm kind of being called to be a healer in some modality or another, although I don't know what form that purpose or call will take. But I've had a lot of people reach out to me to share their experiences, and just talking with me and sharing what I've learned so far has seemed to help them.
Well, so, that's a positive, I guess.
Yeah.
You know, again, could be largely coincidental, but you know, you seem to have a decent anecdotal
sample size. Then another part of this is psychological.
Okay.
So a lot of people are going through the same psychological issues too right now with their attachment styles. And I've noticed that, like, they're actually conscious of it. They're aware of it. A lot of times people go through these patterns over and over again without realizing the pattern that they're in. And it's like all of a sudden now all these people are waking up to their psychological attachment patterns towards relationships, and they're actually trying to do something about it. And it just seems like it's way more than you would expect for the statistical margin of error. Like, but then again, you know, it could be the whole green element phenomenon, you know.
I don't know what that is either.
The green Honda element phenomenon. Let's say you buy a Honda element elements everywhere.
The way you said it that time, I thought you were talking about something completely different. No, I understand.
Oh. Yeah.
Well, no. It may well be. I'm not discounting it. I just, you know me. I like to poke holes in things. That's what I do. But
I like to do that too, because you know, anything that can like stand the test of time, you know, from scrutiny, is that's how science works. You know, sure. What I mean, we try to shoot things down, and if we can't shoot it down, then it eventually becomes at least a theory, if not a law. Although, you know, science is just another kind of faith, but it's one that stood up to scrutiny and the test of time.
Well, yeah. I was thinking of a couple of things while you were talking about all that. Now, you know, obviously, one of the things you mentioned, the whole the chaser and the runner thing. Now, of course, my first thought again, and maybe it's just me being a little bit skeptical or cynical, or just mean-spirited. But my first thought is like, all right, well, where's the line between, you know, the whole chaser and runner and stalker and stalky? You know, because I mean, obviously there's, I'm sure for anybody who doesn't know what this whole thing is about, I mean, I'm assuming, you know, that's just the whole dynamic where one person is pushing away, and you know, like you said, the one person may be clingy and needy, and the other one is just like pretty much get away from me, not necessarily you know, permanently, but just on a smaller scale. But you know, like I said, my first thought goes to, well, you know, for people who are reading into this, how many people are reading into it and then you know, just saying, oh no, they're still being in running mode now, right now. It's like, yeah, they're running away from you a lot.
Okay. Well, okay. So a lot of times when people run into relationship problems, it does relate around their attachment styles, right? And sometimes, you know, these can become exaggerated or obsessive, you know. But we all, I mean, it's very seldom do two people in a relationship actually have what's called a secure attachment style, where it's neither avoidant nor personally, I had what's called an anxious, preoccupied attachment style towards relationships, right? But it was only triggered in certain cases. Most of the time, I had a kind of like a secure approach, but every now and then, if someone was what they call dismissive, avoidant, which is something I just recently ran into, and it triggered those, I guess you could say, shadow aspects of me, and it did become obsessive at that point. And that's when it triggered the running behavior of the other, you know. But a lot of people have these to varying degrees. It's just whether or not it becomes problematic or not. So, yeah.
Interesting. Yeah, well, like I said, I mean, I've never obviously delved that far into that. I have enough problem trying to figure out myself, much less trying to figure out any relationship.
Don't we all?
Like that.
Yeah, we're all so caught up in our own shit. It's hard for us to actually dig through these things consciously.
Yeah, like I said, I mean, as much as I poke fun at, well, more so his fans, not well, I do poke fun, a little fun at him, but more so his fans, Jordan Peterson. The one thing I will agree with him is, you know, most people do need to really clean up their room, you know, especially in our communities. Like, a lot of activists are out there trying to save the world, and they're just a mess themselves, you know, which I think for me is part of why I've... some people would say regressed. I've just retreated again.
Yeah, although, and it's more than just figurative. It's also literal, too.
Yeah.
You know, literally cleaning your room has kind of a feng shui effect on everything else, including psychologically.
Yes.
But, yeah, Jordan Peterson. I've seen some of our friends talking about him lately. I was a little bit behind the curve on this whole NPC thing lately.
Oh, but, yeah. Like I said, I haven't been paying attention to a lot of what goes on, and you know, I've spoken before. I have certain issues with. I am getting mobbed by dogs right now. Seriously, guys, this room is not this big. I'm in the office of my friend's place, who's, you know, who I'm doing the pet sitting gig for, and all four dogs are trying to climb into the room with me at once. This is great. Give us some room here, guys. yeah, I have my issues with some of the stuff he talks about, but I haven't delved too deeply into him. But that's the one thing I hear. That's kind of where I'm at, where I'm like...
I'm kind of with Paul, our good friend Paul Gordon.
Oh, yes.
I agree with him when it comes to a lot of this stuff, the Jordan Peterson stuff and NPC stuff. I think Paul's right on when it comes to that.
I don't even know what the NPC stuff is, other than people are making memes about it right now. So I don't really...
Oh.
I don't.
Okay, so NPC is an acronym from gaming, which stands for non-player character.
Non-playable character. Yeah, no, I know that.
Or non-playable character.
Yeah, I know that. It's like, you know, the people in the.
So I guess
run across people if you're playing a video game when you have a character and you run across other characters that you can't control, but you might be able to talk to or something or whatever.
Right. So like, these are characters in the game that just run from a script, and they're very kind of cookie cutter, very predictable. And I think, and I haven't followed this whole NPC meme very closely, but I can relate to it as a gamer. And it seems like a lot of people are claiming the left to just be like pre-programmed robot, non-playable characters, you know, like as if they're artificial intelligence and like not real people. And to me, there's a little bit of dehumanization aspect to it. But a lot of times, you know, people are very cookie cutter when it comes to that sort of thing. So we do see a lot of the same responses from the left and from the right. You know, the extreme left and right are very, they seem very automatic in their responses with very little thoughtful responses.
Yeah, because they live in a world of sound bites, so they're not really, they don't really have to think. They're told, you know, the whole idea of people being told what to think, that's essentially what is being done. They you know, they pick up these little sound bites and they just repeat them ad nauseum at people. And yeah, stuff. So yeah, I don't know if there was anything further than just it becoming a regurgitated meme again at this point. Because as my buddy Johnny Liberty pointed out, I haven't been paying much attention to Facebook at all, but I just happened to catch a post of his where he was like, you know, basically poking fun at the people who are all claiming that what you said, like, you know, this is kind of geared at the left right now, I guess. People claiming that, you know, they're all NPCs. You know, he's like, it's pretty funny because, you know, the right talks about this, but they're the ones who keep using the word snowflake, which was like, you know, out in 2000. Mm-hmm. And the whole NPC thing we already went through back in like 2013, like where you guys are still falling behind the times.
I was not actually aware of that at the time. That's probably because I was playing Warcraft at the time.
Yeah, well, just like everything else, memes go in cycles. I've learned that as being part of the memeverse over the past few
this
years.
This does seem to be on a little bit deeper level than the moth memes that went around.
But, oh, those things were. I missed the boat on that one. I had no idea where they came from. I'm like, why are we doing this? Is this the level we've sunk to?
Well, you get it now, right? What the moth thing was about?
Not really, other than a moth. Okay. On a bull. I mean, like, I understand, I guess, the initial premise. I don't understand what was the impetus for it, though.
Yeah, I don't really know where it came from.
Oh, okay.
But, I mean, I do know how, you know, moths are attracted to the flame. A lot of times they'll fly into the bug zappers or into a flame at their own detriment. And it is kind of silly. But I don't know what actually sparked that whole viral meme to blow up like it did. I have my own esoteric opinions on what that might have represented.
But. I have. I just... I thought people were just getting really lazy or just really desperate and just reaching because, you know, like I said, there's pretty much nothing new in the meme-iverse. Everything comes around in cycles, and then just, you know, in between the cycles, a whole bunch of junk gets tried and hopefully gets relegated to the dustbin of history, you know, the dustbin of history, and we don't have to deal with it again. Kind of like hoping, but failing that bell bottoms and stuff like that won't come back. They're probably.
I try to see a lot of symbolism and things like that, and so the whole moth to the flame thing. I try to see it as kind of like an analogy to the behavior of people, especially recently.
Well, I mean, so, I'm sure you could, but to me, it's like, you know, when you think about where most of these do originate, you know, which is usually just some idiot 4chan or trying to troll everybody.
maybe it was a coordinated effort by those who control the collective subconscious to spur some sort of collective behavior within us all at certain times.
That could be too. You know, the first to drop a meme could totally be. It's a psyop. That's what it is. All let's see. Now you're just gonna ruin it for everybody. All memes are psyops. Just forget it, folks. All viral campaigns. It's all whatchamacallit. It's all scripted. It's all.
Yeah. Well, I kind of am aware of a lot of things on a subconscious level. Back in the day, I used to dabble in some things called dissociative anesthetics, which is a type of anesthetic that you can put you under, but your conscious mind is still active. And as a result, the conscious mind starts to explore areas of the subconscious mind that it's not usually conscious of. And I really love the work of Carl Jung, who talks about exploring the subconscious. And as a result of that, I kind of became very consciously aware of some of my subconscious processes. And as a result, I also became aware of the subconscious interactions that I had with other people and that with the collective as a whole. So I do kind of see very subtle things going on sometimes that are below the threshold of consciousness for most people. And I do have my own opinion on this whole moth meme thing, but it's very, very esoteric. I won't get into it here.
Yeah, like I said, I don't think I've ever taken any meme to that level or even considered taking a meme to that level. I just make them and throw them out.
Well, you're not a social engineer, Jeremy.
Yeah, this is true. No, I just mean even thinking about it on that level or wanting to think about it on that level. I just usually view it as either funny or people are just stupid.
Well, in our case, like the whole taxation is theft thing. That probably went around in 2012, and then it came back around again a couple years later. But you know, we as anarchists tried to make that a viral meme campaign to as like a form of liberty outreach to the normies. You know what I mean? And the other day, like weeks ago at work, I was talking to the guys at work about taxation, and I got like two or three of them to admit that taxation is indeed theft. You know, and these are guys who are not even libertarian leaning. So, yeah.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's always nice. Over the years, I've gotten a number of people to admit it. Even worse, though, I've gotten a number to admit it and then still justify it somehow, some way.
Yeah. But it looks like our own social engineering campaigns have actually had an effect on the collective, at least to some degree. So the whole taxation is theft meme, it has gotten out there pretty far.
Well,
and the average person has at least had some exposure to it.
Yeah, I mean, some people manage to break it into different areas that, excuse me one second, what are you, things like, I mean, it even, you know, got seeped into the world of sports when there was that one guy, what was his name? Is that the guy who's still running for trying to run for governor in Texas, I think, Corey Watkins. Who got on TV at like a White Sox game or something, or a Rangers game?
That was him.
It was a Rangers game. Yeah, he was sitting behind home plate and managed to get snapped on national TV with wearing that or having a sign that said taxation and stuff or something like that. Right? He was the one who did that. So
I'm actually still friends with him on Facebook, but I did kind of unfollow him because he got a little bit. I don't know. He was trying to like solicit donations and support for his Texas governorship run. And it's like, dude, I'm all the way out here in the Midwest. Like, what do you expect from me? You know, I'm not going to support your run for governor.
Oh, why not, man? I mean, come on. Some people's races are just so important. I mean, Like isn't that Larry? That's the guy who's running in New York, Larry Sharp. That's his whole shtick.
Yeah,
that he thinks people from out of state should totally donate to him because his race is the most important race this year.
Right, every election is always the most important one.
That's standard tripe. Is that the word right. I'm looking for? For most times, but I'm him specifically. It's because of he's the libertarian running there, and because it's New York. And it's funny because years ago I used to think like that. Before I became an anarchist, and I was still in the Libertarian Party and actually running for a local office there. The whole idea when people were telling me, I should just get out of New York, even back then it was, no, I'm going to stay and fight because if you can win here, then anybody can win anywhere. Like, that's the whole attitude, but it's, you don't really stand a chance. And it's funny, I was arguing with a buddy, not really arguing, but kind of going back and forth on Twitter the other day with a buddy of mine who actually is pretty, I think, does he call himself an anarchist? I think he might, or if he doesn't, he's definitely pretty much an anarchist at this point. But he's a guy who, when I first met him, I actually met him through the group, the Oath Keepers, years ago. He's a, he's a former, was he Army? I think, medic, maybe. Anyway, he's, former military, gung-ho guy, constitutionalist, all that stuff. And I kind of pushed him over the edge over the years. But he was promoting on his Twitter that, libertarians should, if they're going to vote, should vote for Larry Sharp, and he's our guy. And, I've paid attention to the guy a little bit, but it's funny because I caught his interview on the Joe Rogan show a month or so ago, whatever. And he just came off like such a typical New Yorker to me, like a used car salesman from New York. Mm. It was pretty, pretty illuminating for me because I had heard so many people say, oh yeah, he is one of the good ones. Then I listened to him, and like, especially if you listen to that interview, he's very defensive. He immediately starts to try to just attack Joe and pretty much just starts screaming like, you're a Democrat, you're a Democrat, you're a Democrat at him at one point or something ridiculous like that. It's like, dude, really? Like, you're supposed to be running for governor?
False dichotomy much?
And you're trying to get people out of from out of state to give you money because your campaign is the most important one in the country. Mm-hmm. Now, granted, I, as a former prisoner of the Democratic People's Republic of New Yorkistan, I believe that Prince Andrew over there definitely needs the... I mean, since we do still have to deal with politics as much as we want the state to be gone, it's still here. We have to deal with it. Prince Andrew definitely has to leave Andrew Cuomo, who is just a horrible, horrible, horrible human being. But I don't know. I don't think old Larry's the one. I don't know if you've followed much about him, but he's a fast talking New Yorker. It's funny. If you ever get a chance to catch the Joe Rogan interview with him, it's pretty illuminating, I think.
Okay. I haven't really followed politics much since 2012 when I dropped out of the whole thing. I used to be part of the whole change it from the inside crowd, and I actually joined the Libertarian Party in 2004, and I voted for Michael Badnarik that year, who got like maybe 1% of the vote or something. And then in 2008, I was a delegate for Ron Paul, and I actually met him twice. But I got to see how rigged the system is from the inside and how someone like Ron Paul could never actually be elected. So, and also in 2008, I met someone who is also running again. In 2008, I was at the Indiana State Convention, the Republican convention for Indiana State. And that's where I met, Ron Paul and stuff. And I was a delegate for him. But I also met someone who I didn't know who he was at the time, who is now known as Adam Kokesh, right?
Oh, jeez.
Yeah.
That piece of work.
Yeah, I know, right? So when I met him back then, he seemed really passionately involved, and it seemed like it was for all the right reasons. But as we've gotten to know Adam over the years, I think those of us who consider ourselves to be true anarchists can see through the facade, if you will.
Yeah. Well, I recently just did another podcast that largely focused around him and stuff that him and his people do. which I'm sure has fallen on a lot of deaf ears, because it happened the last time we did that, where we did a really in-depth one on the Lulberts, where we kind of went over a lot of his misdeeds and pretty much, you know, general scamminess and scumminess over the years, and his supporters just keep continue to pile on and you know, claim that we're liars and stuff like that. And still too many people just think he's a swell guy, and I just can't stomach it.
Yeah, I see through it now too. And before I bought into that, you know, and you know, I guess way back in 2016, maybe. Back. I know it was only a couple of years ago, but when I heard Adam was going to run in 2020, I was like, well, cool. You know what I mean? Because, like, you remember Daryl W. Perry? He ran as one of the candidates for the Libertarian Party, and he probably knew he didn't have a chance to win, but he was using it as a platform to spread consistent libertarian philosophy. And there was a couple of really good debates with Daryl W. Perry, you know, where he put, you know, the non-aggression principle and self-ownership out there. He even said taxation is theft. And, you know, he got a lot of that kind of message out to a lot of people. And so I was originally in, you know, 2016, I was excited that Adam was going to run in 2020 because I thought, you know, he was going to do the same thing that Daryl W. Perry was doing in 2016. But that's obviously not the case anymore.
No, he just wants to raise money for himself.
Right. Yeah.
Because he's not even running for not president anymore. Now he's switched his campaign completely to run for Senate in Arizona after.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Oh yeah, that's one of the many things that a bunch of other folks have been trying to call him out on for years that people just keep ignoring, and that he, you know, stuff like, oh yeah, I'm gonna run for this in 2020, and he's been accepting donations for it the entire time, and then just all of a sudden up and changes his strategy, and you know, people who were planning on giving him money for one thing, it's like, well, kind of like we were talking about before, like, well, now why have I donated to a guy who's running for Senate in Arizona when I maybe live, you know, clear across the country, and I was only donating at first because I thought he was running for not president. You know, kind of like the whole thing when he got busted, what was that, last year, pulled over allegedly because he was had just filed for his presidency, or I guess that was now almost 2 years ago now.
Oh yeah.
And the whole thing where he got busted for that. And, you know, set up a GoFundMe, essentially. Oh, help us out. We're going to need bail money. And then collects enough money to give in for the bail money. And then, we've decided that we're going to continue to fight this, and we're not going to pay Adam's bail, and we're going to fight this on such and such grounds, and blah, blah, blah. And it's like, well, wait a minute. What about all the money the people just donated to you?
Right.
Oh, yeah. That'll end up going somewhere else and get redirected, you know?
Yeah. Well, where I'm from, that's called fraud.
Or politics, but you know, then we repeat ourselves. But you know, that it actually means that he's probably a really good fit for that. So
he should
keep running. He'd be a great politician.
And might as well.
So I don't know how we got from spirituality to talking about as I still like to refer to him, Liberty's Tide Pod. I think it's the greatest description ever for Adam Kokesh.
Yeah.
I gave up way. I guess I gave up way later than you. Because, 2008, I still was barely paying attention. I didn't even know who Ron Paul was in 2008. Beyond the fact that he was some congressman from Texas.
Well, 2008, I was actually really excited about the whole Ron Paul thing. But then, you know, being at the convention and seeing how it was rigged in more than one way. So like so Indiana divided into districts, and we voted with like a head count. Right. And it was McCain versus Paul in Indiana. And we had like a majority of the votes, like 90 something to 50 something. But the person who was in charge of the head count flipped the votes in favor of McCain, saying that McCain had the 90 some and we only had the 50 some. And so that was one thing that they did at the district level. And then when we convened into like the main room with the electronic voting machines to vote on the state level, those electronic voting machines, don't get me started, man. Cause I was the second person in line for my particular machine that I voted on. And the lady in front of me, who was first in line, she had some sort of problem with the machine and had to call the attendant over. And I don't know what kind of issue she had, but she finally got done voting. And then it was my turn to vote on the machine. And it flipped my vote to the other person. So I called the attendant over and showed him what happened. It finalized my vote for the wrong candidate. And you'll never guess what he said. He just said, oh, vote again. Just vote again. And I was like, what? First of all, you know, that was illegal. Like, because I actually cared about laws at the time. But then also, even if I had voted again, it would only cancel out my first vote, and I would have had to vote a third time to actually make my vote count.
Oh, just keep doing it till the numbers work out, Sonny. You'll be fine.
Yeah. So there's all kinds of election fraud on all levels to guarantee that people like Ron Paul wouldn't even get elected in the first place. So after 2008, I was very jaded, but I did again support the Ron Paul campaign as like a fundraiser in 2012. But it was very obvious during the primary that he wasn't going to get elected. So I dropped out really soon in that race, like before the primaries were even over.
Yeah.
So, and then it was, and then I think it was fall of 2013 during the whole government shutdown debacle that, I actually started calling myself an anarchist because I said, okay, well, if I had to choose between two extremes of too much government or no government at all, I would rather have no government at all. And that's when I started looking into anarchy and became an anarchist.
Yeah.
That's about 5 years ago now.
Yeah, we are. We're getting on at this point. Yeah, that's when everything finally fell into place for me. But it's funny you were mentioning the thing about the whole voter fraud thing. I remember the last time I actually voted, I ran into something similar to what you're describing, but I just honestly had pretty much given up caring at that point. And I think it was either because it had something to do with the election that I was trying to get involved in, or it was probably for my cousin who had been the town clerk in the township that I lived in for a long time. And I went out and voted for him most years just because I was like, all right, whatever, you know, he's my cousin. I guess I'll go vote for him. But I didn't really necessarily care. But I went out and it was probably, like I said, it was probably one of the elections for him. But it was also around the time of other national elections, too. So I went out and voted. And I had a similar issue where, like, clearly something was wrong with the machine. And, you know, it was definitely changing things. And when I went to go ask, instead of them, you know, it was a bunch of little old ladies that ran the one in because it was always help. My voting booth was the one of the elementary schools up the block from me where I used to live in New York. And the little old ladies, instead of telling me to just vote again, were just like, oh, OK, well, here you go. We're going to have this, you know, we're just going to collect these paper ballots. And, you know, you just fill this out and hand it in. And then I was like, how am I sure? Like, I think I remember asking, like, how am I sure that, you know, this is actually going to get put in or whatever? Like, are you guys actually going to submit these? And she pretty, but you know, the attitude they had, they were totally shrugging you off. It was just like, oh yeah, we're just making you feel better by having you fill this paper out, but we're pretty much going to throw them all out the dump or in the dumpster at the end of the night.
Kind of reminds me of Florida in 2000.
Well, yeah, that's what I'm saying. But they're not. But they weren't even like hiding it, you know. Back, you know, back where they, you know, supposedly all this election fraud stuff that's supposed to happen is supposed to be like, you know, under the table, behind the scenes stuff. You're not really supposed to know. Like, yeah, they're just pretty blatant about it. They're just like, yeah, whatever, man. We're letting you know it's all a farce.
Yeah,
but most people just still aren't quick enough on the draw to catch on to it. Unfortunately,
what year was that?
That had to be like, well, the last time I voted in a presidential election was 2012. So it was either 2012 or it might have been 2013 because that was when I got drawn into running for a local office that year.
So that was way after the whole hanging Chad thing.
Oh, yeah,
in Florida.
Yeah. That was years. But that's what I'm saying. Yeah. Like, you know, normally that stuff it's a scandal because like, you're not supposed to, this isn't supposed to happen. But yeah, years later, they just stopped caring. They're just like, oh, yeah, we're totally stuffing the ballots or just, you know, disregarding your votes. It doesn't even matter. Although, you know, in a place like New York, for the most part, most things don't matter. Like everything stays the same. So the same parties get in over and over and over again, you know. It's the reason Chuck Schumer has been the senator there for I can't even remember how long.
Yeah, it seemed like voter fraud was like a big deal back in 2000 in Florida. And then again in 2004 here in Ohio, when one of the guys who worked on those electronic voting machines testified that, yeah, we rigged it, you know, and it was like a big deal back then. But now nobody cares.
Well, yeah, that was like, I mean, I don't even remember. It was during one of the Obama elections where they tried to make a big deal at, like, you know, the one woman from Ohio who did get busted. I don't remember if that was the 08 election or the 2012 election, but there was a couple people got busted. I just remember that one woman being plastered everywhere in like memes and stuff like that because she was like interviewed on the street and basically said she had voted like six times or something. Yeah, people get they get up in arms about it for a little while, and then the news cycle shifts, and the next thing that people are told that they need to pay attention to and focus on, that becomes the story of the day, and everybody forgets about all this stuff, you know? So, but that's the way the world works, right?
Yeah, I guess. At least so far.
Yeah. Anyway, so now that we've drifted all the way over here, again, I don't even know how we got here, but were you done with your spirituality talk and... where you're going with
things. I think I've said at least what I intended to say when it comes to that stuff. But this is a show about libertarianism and anarchy. So I guess we'll go ahead and keep on with that.
Well, no, it wasn't completely disconnected. You were talking about using this type of knowledge, I guess, in outreach and whatnot.
Oh, well, yeah. Okay. So as far as that goes, well, I'll touch on that again. So, when I was hanging out with all these people who may or may not have been exposed to this kind of stuff, you know, I realized that, you know, this whole message of anarchy can be boiled down really quickly. It doesn't take necessarily 6 months or even 6 weeks. Like sometimes you can get it across in like 6 seconds. And basically I just tell people now, like, and the left really kind of can relate to this, you know, when you say all interactions should be voluntary and consensual, and that there's no exceptions to that, including government, you know, and that kind of plants the seed in their mind that, oh, hey, yeah, he's got a point there, you know. And so, you know, that's kind of what I boil it down to when I'm talking to people who haven't been exposed to this yet. And so, like, when I was at the gathering and stuff in 2016, and then again this time around, you know, I don't really preach on it. Because I figure, you know, that's what I have to teach them, but they have a lot to teach me. And so I'll get my little, you know, my little 2 seconds or whatever, 6 seconds across and plant that seed and then, you know, move on to other things. But yeah, it's really just about relating to other people. I think when it comes to interpersonal relationships, that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to get our message out to people, and by like debating them and telling them they're wrong, all it kind of does is turn them off to the message they were trying to give them. So we have to find better ways to deliver that message. And I think, you know, relating to people on an emotionally intelligent level, and, you know, it's about interpersonal connections, really. I'm all about the emotional intelligence aspect of it rather than, like, you know, I'm about EQ now instead of IQ, you know, because a lot of people might not have the IQ to have these deep philosophical or logical debates, but a lot of times when you relate to them on an emotional level, then they can get it. You know, I've been a big fan of, you know, Sterling Lujan and, you know, Derek Bros and a lot of other people who take that compassionate anarchist approach. And I think that's where we're going to get more flies with honey than you do with vinegar. Or is that how the saying goes? I might be butchering the old saying.
I think that's how it goes. But I recently started to question that one. I think it was last year. I think I started asking around, and people just kind of gave me funny looks. And I was like, yeah, sure, this whole honey but vinegar thing. But don't you actually attract even more with, well, poo? Like, aren't flies even more attracted to that? So
I guess so.
Yeah, I don't know.
So how would we go about? Okay, so how would the analogy?
I don't know. I don't know if the FCC airwaves are the best place to explore that question either. But that just popped into my head just because you said it.
Well, maybe it's like, you know, look how bad that things have gotten by voting for the lesser of two evils over time. You know, and by giving into this belief that evil is necessary somehow. You know, look how bad things have gotten. We ended up last election with Hillary or Trump. It's like, oh, really? Those are really great choices there. You know, maybe there's a better way.
Yeah. Sadly, there still seems to be plenty of people out there who thought those were good choices. At least on either side, you know?
Yeah. Well, I think each of them might actually get their turn. You know, we've seen how bad Trump is, and maybe next time around we'll see how bad Hillary is. Okay, everybody sucks.
I think she's really, really done. I hope she's really, really done.
Yeah.
I don't think she'll ever be back again in that capacity, thankfully.
Maybe not.
No, because,
but yeah, like when it comes to, like, say the Kavanaugh thing, you know, having like a 9-person ongoing constitutional convention that, you know, can make decisions about things like the Constitution and the Bill of Rights. It's like, why should we give a small group of people so much power, you know, where things like that are so important? Because it, you know, it shouldn't matter.
No, but Well, yeah, but it, again, you got to figure out ways to get people to understand that. And I'm not like opposed to the whole, like what you were talking about, you know, going at it from more of a, I guess, an emotional standpoint or aspect or trying to connect with people there. My whole thing lately is just, I haven't cared enough to connect with anybody. Just, like I said, I've been dealing with so much of my own stuff. I haven't been dealing with it. Like, things come up in conversation, or I manage to be able to sneak little things here and there. I think I might have talked about it on the last show with Michael, because I finally went and did that court mandated anger management class that I had to take as part of the plea deal. And I was able to bring up some ideas. And I was able to talk to people only because I was in that setting, and the conversations were like literally being brought up in front of me. It was like really hard for me to escape for the most part. Other than that, I don't have a lot of interactions with other people these days, other than like very brief ones. And it's more just, if it's warm enough that people can see the t-shirt I'm wearing, or if I'm wearing one of the two sweatshirts that I have, I'm still just a walking billboard for things, because I have like, I don't know, 20 something odd, I don't even know at this point, t-shirts. They're all like liberty and anarchy related things that friends of mine have made over the years, or other things that I've bought and whatnot. So sometimes I'll get conversations. My favorite is because I still wear my Fiends pins on my hats.
Yeah, I wore those to the gathering, actually.
I just wear them all the time. And because I have my two baseball caps that I still wear, because, you know, I'm a kid from the 90s, so I still wear my hat backwards. And whatchamacallit, and I have the pin front and center, and I have the one that gets the most is the state speeches hate speech one.
My favorite.
Yeah, I get a lot of people. I definitely get a lot of people staring at it. Some people are brave enough to say something. You know, a couple people have said they thought that was kind of cool. A couple people give me nasty looks. What did that mean? Like, very, you know, obviously looking for an argument right away. But outside of that, and that one class I took, where, like I said, I had a captive audience, and the conversation came up anyway. And luckily, we're in a place where everybody was kind of down on the police to begin with anyway, because we were all in a situation where we were kind of forced into this thing from interactions originally that started with police. And most of them weren't very positive experiences, from what I learned, even though these were not, again, these weren't like you're saying, these weren't like anarchists or anything. These were just like normal, regular everyday people, you know, who probably voted in some capacity at some point. But they were just like, oh, the cops are horrible. That was actually my favorite, because the term mafia and terrorist got thrown around multiple times, and it wasn't by me.
Nice.
But yeah, other than that, I haven't either dealt with a lot of people and or just haven't had the desire to, because I felt I did my evangelizing for years, and now I'm kind of just like, there's a bunch of other people out there doing it right now. I got other things to do.
Yeah. Well, I think a lot of even normal people are starting to see the violence inherent in the system, so to speak, you know. And so that could be the poo that is attracting more flies.
Yeah, you would hope so. I mean, I would hope so. Although every time I do look at things and say, oh yeah, there seems to be an uptick, people are paying attention, people are understanding, and then again the news cycle shifts and everybody forgets, and there always just seems to be these lulls that they're, on one hand it seems like the numbers keep growing, but then when you look at like overall trends and the fact that we're still headed in, it's been seemingly a bad direction in a lot of areas, you know, or other things come up like what Michael and I talked about the last show that I did with him about the whole Facebook thing. Like you were talking about, you know, we want to get John Vibes on here with us, because he's actually one of the people who is directly affected by it. One of the things I kept saying, which I know angered a lot of people, was, listen, guys, I hate to break it to you, we're not as important as you think we are. You know,
well, like, they seem to think so. You know, and not only was a lot of like John's pages and stuff taken down, I admin for like 15 pages, 9 of which were taken down. So yeah.
Well, yeah, but as I discussed with Michael, yeah, a lot of pages went down because they were admin by the same small group of people. Like everybody shared admin status on so many different pages. And there was a couple of people who seemed to be targeted more than others, and they were connected to hundreds and hundreds of pages.
Mm. Yeah.
You know.
Now, was that actually like sock accounts, I heard?
Either sock accounts or just people who use fake name, you know, use pseudonyms or whatever. That's something that Facebook has tried to crack down on and has been claiming they've been trying to crack down on for years. And a lot of these people in particular have already been had their accounts banned for 3, 7, 30 days, whatever, repeatedly for a number of so-called offenses, including being reported for having a fake name. And if you can't verify your identity with Facebook, if you don't have an ID to be able to show them when they demand it from you, then they're just going to shut your account down. And if that's the account that's the admin on these pages, those pages get affected because those people are connected. You know, that's how that happened. And, you know, when I first saw
it, sucks that it takes down the whole page because of one admin.
Well, yeah. I mean, the simple solution is usually just to remove that admin. And in most cases, people have, in the past at least, people have been able to bring their pages back up. Like our friend Danilo Cuellar, he got wrapped up in that whole mess, even though he had nothing to do with it. His stuff isn't offensive, he doesn't get reported for anything. He uses his real name. Unfortunately, some of the people that he let admin on his page were people, other friends of ours, one of whom I think you mentioned already, Sterling Lujan, people who used either don't use their real names or use variations of the spellings of their name that they can't verify with Facebook. And they've been in trouble with Facebook for this stuff before. So when they all go down, everybody's pages go down with them. Like I said, because so many people...
I wonder if they can get those republished.
I asked Danilo to try to run a test for me. He did reapply. He asked to be reinstated. He sent the appeal in and asked to be reinstated. And I told him to remove all of, I don't know if he actually did it. I suggested having him remove, because the way the whole thing worked is Facebook didn't just start deleting people's pages. They unpublished them, which is different because you can still have access to them when they're unpublished. The rest of the Facebook community can't, but any of the admins still can. So I told him to go in, remove everybody except himself temporarily, even if he had to send a message to everybody and just be like, hey, I'm just doing this temporarily to test something. Don't worry about it. Nothing personal. I'm not blaming you for this, yada, yada. And then make the appeal and see if they just flip it back on, because that's happened in the past. You know, I've had that happen before where they went after, some of our pages in the past because one of the admins on there was using an account like that. One time it was even mine because I had one of my backup accounts also as an admin on the page. And because that one was connected to it, they said, and all I had to do is drop it. You know, we just drop that admin, hit the appeal button. And within a day or two, they turned it back on. So
now I had heard a rumor that I never really checked into about Trump requesting from Facebook a list of like anti-government and activist pages within the 48 hours before all those pages went down. So I wonder if that was actually connected or if it was just a rumor.
I have no idea. I've heard that, but I've also heard that same exact rumor a number of times before. And for some reason, that's just one of those things that every time I see it, I expect to see World Net Daily or one of those pages. Like I expect to see that on the byline. I have no idea.
Off to check Snopes.
Yeah, there you go. That's actually one of my favorite memes that I saw that's been going around. I don't know. I guess it's been going around for like a year or so now, but there's a meme about the people who used to run Snopes. Because remember when it's like when people finally figured out years ago that it was just like this woman, this couple and their cat or something that lived in like Alabama or whatever. And there's a newer meme that showed up that's like, you remember these folks that ran Snopes? And like now this is who it is. And like the guy, like because they made a bunch of money off it, they got divorced. And then the guy married some younger, much trashier looking woman. And like that, it was just funny because like it's like this is now who everybody goes to for their source. So yeah, anyway, I don't even know how we got here again. We've been all over the place tonight.
We're kind of like the Seinfeld of anarchy.
There you go.
A show about nothing. We just go where we go with the flow.
We have definitely been accused of that before in the past. There's actually been people who have written in and called us that, but. Anyway, let's see. I'm looking at the clock. Yeah, we should probably get wrapping up soon anyway, because I'm sure... let's see, when do we start? Yeah, we can go for a few more minutes. We should probably start getting wrapping up soon. But so did you have anything else? We drifted again, but we're were you done talking about your spirituality stuff? I think, like you said, we're just going to go, you were using it more for connection to people and stuff, right? It's the whole thing.
Yeah, I think I covered most of that.
Yeah. All right. Well, yeah. And remember, kiddies, don't go out and vote. It's a waste of your time. Since we are, I guess we're getting close to voting season, unfortunately. It's a good PSA.
Yep. Halloween's coming up, so watch out for those marijuana edibles.
Oh, God.
I can only hope to get those in my trick-or-treat
bag. I know,
bag.
Right? I've never... If I had gotten any of the drugs I was promised that I was going to get, you know, things stuffed in my candy when I was a kid, I'd be a happy man. I haven't gotten any of it.
Right?
It's kind of like all the flashbacks I was promised from the LSD that never came, man. Not yeah. cool, dude. Not cool. Anyway, with that, yeah, well, let's get wrapping up. This is a lot of fun, though, man. It's good to do a show with you again. We haven't... The last time you and I recorded anything? The Fest?
It's been a long time.
In Michigan?
Yeah, the last show I did was at the Fest. Yeah.
I've been saying I was going to try to record a bunch of stuff while I was here at my friend's house in Virginia, and I've been kind of productive. Like I said, I did an episode of The Fiends last week with Michael, and then I did none for my shows, though. And you are actually not only do we do shows together here, you actually are host on what was supposed to be my other show, The Seeds of Liberty, that we haven't done in forever. But we couldn't get the other guys, so we decided to do a Fiend show tonight. But yeah, was that the last one? I think we did. I know we did like one other recording after the Midwest Peace Liberty Fest, but I can't remember if you were on that one or not. Or we tried to.
I think I have done one show since then, but I don't remember if it was a Seeds or a Fiends. I think I did a Fiends with Michael at one point.
Oh, yeah. Oh, no, we definitely did, because we tried to do a couple of them. You and Andre and I, we tried to do shows, because there was the one we tried to do and I kept dropping out and we had to give up on.
That's right.
And then
the Wi-Fi was all...
Yeah, and then I finally got the one that worked well enough that the very next night I parked in the same exact spot to do another show and got harassed by the cops multiple times. Oh, I don't miss New York.
Yeah. But hopefully, you know, once I get, you know, well-versed with Audition or Audacity, you know, I might actually kind of branch out and start my own little podcast, which the co-host I'm going to bring in will be anarchist, but it's not going to be about anarchy. It's probably going to be more about this spiritual and psychological stuff that I've been on lately. But I was hoping John was going to be here, because he's always good when it comes to that kind of stuff. He's good with conspiracy theories and entheogens and spirituality and stuff.
Yeah, our friend and fellow fiend, John Vibes. He's I was hoping to actually, because I'm down near his territory now. I was hoping to actually meet up with him for once, but he's still busy. You know, he spent most of the summer traveling. He was doing his cancer-free victory tour thing, which was kind of cool, right. Which is why he hasn't done a show in forever. And then I think you tagged both of us when I was talking, you know, saying that I was here. You commented and tagged both of us. What did he say? He was at some rally or march or something this weekend, right? Didn't he say that he was doing? He's a good dude. Hopefully we'll get him back on the show one of these days. But yeah, so, the Seeds of Liberty isn't completely dead yet. We're
just on hiatus.
Yeah, we're on a very long hiatus, and I have to get our hosting situation reset up because, well, Dave ruined everything. But that's been the theme of that show for 3.5, almost 4 years at this point, so why change it now?
Yep.
All right. Well, before we get too much further into the weeds, let's get wrapping up. But, yeah, man, this has been good. It's good good talking to you, and I guess we'll have to get together and do this again at some point when I have a house to hang out in. But
absolutely.
Thank you, everybody.
You're always welcome to come over here and do it live.
Yeah, man. When I get to head west again, I will. I've been stuck on the East Coast for a while because I had some things to do. I was trying to see the kids as much as possible, and now with Murder Dog and having to go back to Philly once a week for the next 10 weeks, don't know how far I can travel, you know, west without making it totally crazy on us. So we'll see. Unless I find work out that way. I mean, hey, I think I said at the last show, people are looking for a pet sitter. We travel now, so hit me up, and I'm sure I'll head out in that direction one of these days. But anyway, thank you everybody as always for listening. For more of us, go to freedomfeeds.com, and we'll catch you next time. Worms.